Welcome to East Lake. We're a church for everyone. We're in the last week of a series on how to raise amazing kids. And everybody wants their kids to be amazing. They want them to be super smart because we want them to be successful and we love them. The problem is I wasn't born a parent. Parenting is something that I learned to do. And sometimes in life you have to unlearn something before you can learn something. So for instance, last week we talked about the secret to communication is your connection. So maybe you were raised in a home and your parents thought there was a connection because they were the parents. And so they were saying all kinds of wonderful things to you and they thought you were listening, but you knew you weren't listening because there was no connection between you. In fact, that's the principle right there in all communication is how well am I connected. If there's someone you're having a hard time talking to right now, or you have a hard time hearing them, and you're thinking, how do I get my point across? How do I get them to listen? The place to begin is to ask myself, how well are we connected? Because no connection, no communication. It's like a bad radio in some families. You get static, 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 and in and out connection, and nothing's coming across because we don't have the connection. So you might find yourself right now, if you're a parent, or apply this in any relationship that you have, that you have to unlearn some ways you connected in your family to relearn how to connect with your children now so you can communicate. It doesn't work for you to just say, I'm the parent. It didn't work for you when you were a child, and it's not working for you when you're a parent. Now, this week, we're talking about how to inspire effort instead of perfection. And Jesus doesn't require us to be perfect. But sometimes I require that of myself. And I can require it of my children. And it's not something I would plan for or say that's okay, but it occurs. One of the ways I know my fixation with perfection is how well I handle my humanity. You know, how well do I handle my imperfections, you know, my mistakes and the sins that I do. You know, can it be like a really serious thing when I make mistakes and I have sins and it causes all kinds of problems, and yet can I remember that I'm human? My grandfather took me down a notch one time when I was a teenager. He taught me how to play golf, and so the older I got, the better I got. And I was a club thrower. So, I mean, when I played golf, I threw clubs across the fairway. I threw them at my friends. I threw them up into trees. I threw them at the golf cart. I mean, I was always throwing clubs. And one time my grandfather, after I threw a club, he said, you know, Robin, he goes, you act like you're a much better golfer than you are every time you throw a club. You act like you never hit bad shots. You hit bad shots all the time. And it was like he said to me, you want people to think you're better than you are. So you throw a club. Now, how does that relate to parenting? Do you know that I can talk to my children, treat my children in a way that I want other people to think my family is better than it is? I want everybody to think I have a perfect family. Maybe someone in your family wanted everybody else to think your perfect was family, and all it ever caused was everybody just to get angry and mad at each other, and it caused a lot of distance, because guess what? There are no perfect families. Yours was not perfect, and the one you have now will not be. You're not a perfect parent, and you didn't have them. You aren't and will not ever be perfect. And Jesus doesn't require it. So we're not shooting for perfection. What we are shooting for, and it's the big idea this weekend, you can write it in your notes, we inspire them to give outstanding effort, not perfection. Outstanding effort. And this is Jesus talking, telling a story. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Circle that. Jesus talking, he tells this story about this boss that had three different employees, and he gave them all a different part, like a little bit of money. Like one got $5,000, one got $2,000, and another one got $1,000. And he said, go invest this money for me. So here they are, they're doing this work. And for two of them, it worked out really super well. I mean, they gave a lot of effort into it. And do you know something? The effort that your children give is directly tied to their success in life. How well we can train them to give an outstanding effort. And in this particular story, when Jesus, after they've given the effort, when they come back, he says, man, I'm going to put you in charge of a lot of things when I see that kind of effort. Let me read you something here about effort. This is from a book called Circle Makers. The standardized math test Japanese children take, they always consistently score higher than American children. Well, some assume the reason is because they have a propensity towards mathematics. The primary difference researchers have discovered is that they may put out more effort. In one study involving first graders, students were given a difficult puzzle to solve. The researchers weren't interested in whether or not the children could solve the puzzle. They simply wanted to see how long they would try before they gave up. American children lasted 9.47 minutes. Japanese children lasted 13.93 seconds. In other words, they tried 40% longer. Is it any wonder that they scored higher on the math exams? Here's the truth. The Japanese first graders simply tried harder. So here's the thing. I mean, we're inspiring effort in our children, not perfection, and not wanting to even try to make them think they can be perfect, but we can inspire effort. And in this story, Jesus says, because of the effort that I see you put out, I'm going to give you a lot more. And then there was one that didn't put any effort in. One of them got $1,000, and he came back. He says, way too afraid that I couldn't do it perfect, God. So I didn't try at all. I played it safe. I didn't put any effort into it all. And he didn't hear, well done, good and faithful servant. Come and be happy with me. I'll put you in charge of a lot of things. He heard, you missed your opportunity. And even what you have, you won't be able to hang on to. It's the old saying, use it or lose it. And so really what we're trying to inspire our children is that they would be willing and they can put out effort. There was a story about some violinists in Germany, and they divided them into three different groups, and there was the ones that they thought would be making their living as a violinist, and there was the middle group that they thought might be able to make, and then there was the one that they thought would never make it. And they all practiced the same amount until they got 8 years old, and then everything changed, and let me read you some of what happened here. So here's what they did. That's when their practice habits began to change. The researchers found that at the age of 20, the average players that had logged about 4,000 hours of practice time were the good violinists. The ones that had done about 8,000 hours were the elite performers, and they set the standard. And then there was those that had 10,000 hours. There was no denying that the ones that went on to a professional career practiced the most. So here's the thing. If you have children here, the question is going to be for you, how do you inspire them? How do you inspire them to put out an outstanding effort? Because here's what you need to know. Your children, their success is directly tied to the effort they put out. In fact, every time you look in the mirror and see the person in the mirror, it's the same for you. Effort. So let's take a look at how we can see some of these things. How is it that we inspire effort? And number one, support their dream. So we're just going to, like, okay, not perfection, that's not the goal. How do we inspire effort, support their dream? And this is God talking. I alone know the plans I have for you. Plans to bring you prosperity and not disaster. Plans to bring about the future you hope for. Would you circle that? Because I know a lot of times it seems like with God that he has a big blueprint in the sky and it's his plan. He's going to force you to do everything he wants. But here's what this is saying. God actually knows your dreams and he has plans to make your dreams come true. Please see him that way. He's not like the man behind the curtain in the Wizard of Oz. Bring me the witch's broom. That's not God. It's your dreams that matter. And he has plans to make your dreams come true. Can you see him that way? Focus more on what you'd like to see occur in your future and what his plans are. Do you know the dreams that your children have? And what plans have you made to see that those come true? My son Capone, my oldest son, had a very early dream that he wanted to be a musician and sing songs and write songs and have a band and, second coming of the Beatles. My son Capone was, here he comes, he's going to be the guy. And by the sixth grade, he already knew, this is where I'm going, this is who I'm going to be. And so, he gets the instruments, he starts singing, pretty soon he's got a band together, and, he's on his way to his dream. Everything's going fine, they have nowhere to practice. So I thought, all right, garage band is here for a reason. So I said, we'll open up our garage. You can practice in our garage, So they go in there and they start practicing and everything's fine until I have this one lousy neighbor across the street. It's too loud. you know. And the problem was he was an attorney, he was a lawyer. So, you know, he told me a couple times to turn it down, and I told him I would and didn't. And so, you know, he writes me this big, long letter, you know, all detailed out. This is what's going to happen to you. You're going to go to the electric chair, and we're going to take your house and everything. You don't turn that music down. You know, signed a lawyer. I was like, whoa, you know. So. But, you know, I thought, well, you know, and so I started to try to figure it out. And now all of a sudden I realized my son has a dream, and he has a big problem because he can't practice anymore. So I started to think about, like, what could we do? And I talked to Clarice, and here's what we decided to do. We built a practice room in our garage, and we reinforced it with sound. And Mr. Tippity-Too lawyer across the street couldn't hear it. And guess what? He's not getting a signed album when my son becomes famous. He's getting backstage passes. He's getting nothing other than I'm going to call him and go, hey, how you like us now? But here's what did occur. Did it cost real money to build that inside my garage? Yes. Did I lose my parking place inside my garage? Yes. Did my son's dream stay alive? Yeah, sure did. We built a sound room in there. So here's just a very practical thing for you this week. Very, very practical. Like with your child, find out what their dream is, and this week do one practical thing to support that dream. Now, if you have a whole mess of kids, just pick one, and then next week move on to the other, and another, and another, and another, and give one to an aunt, and let her take one of them. But, I mean, just, like, find out what is their dream. Because listen now, do you know why God's focused on your dreams? Because he knows it'll inspire your effort. You know, sometimes kids are crushed underneath the weight of their parents' dreams for them. And then their parents, you know, They'll only support the dream that they have for their child, and they want to know then, why doesn't my kid will never try hard? It's like, well, because he doesn't even want, it's not his dream. It's okay to have dreams for your kids. God has dreams for you, but you have to know the difference. In fact, you might have a hard time like keeping it on track, and you're wondering about that, and I'm just asking the question, like, would you let God support the dream that he knows that you have for your life? And you might think, no way, man. I don't want him that close, because the next thing you know, he's going to open up that book and tell me all kinds of things to do, and I can't drink, I can't do this. Oh, just stay over there, God. But are you sure? Maybe if you try to let him support your dream, you might find out that your dream comes along much quicker. Just ask him, give him a chance. God has a really smart way of doing it, because he knows if he supports your dream, that it'll inspire your outstanding effort. I used to watch my son and those little dudes go into that practice room in the heat of summer, sweating like crazy, and work hours and hours and hours and hours on music, and nobody had to make them. I can't get him to pick up one sock in his bedroom, but boy, he's in there working for 7 hours. Why? Because we supported his dream. So that's number one. You want to inspire outstanding effort, find out what their dream is, and then support. Just pick one thing this week. Number two, nurture their progress. Now, I want to make a disclaimer here, because I thought a lot about using this word nurture, okay? Because to me, that feels like a girl word, or sort of like a woman word. And so, like, all my friends here, I thought they're not going to like that word. The guys aren't going to like that word, you know? And I understand. Because when I first wrote it down, I thought, I'm not using the word nurture. That, like, give me a, you know, I don't like that. I feel like I should drink wine, too. That's terrible. That's a bad word. But the truth is, when I thought about myself as a parent and I looked back, it's exactly how I felt and thought. Nurture means to help something grow. And that's what it's always been for me. It also means to cherish. And I certainly cherish my children. And so the question is, how do you nurture their progress? Do you know it's the picture of how Jesus thought and talked about people that he loved? Look in the Bible here. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones God's messengers. How often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen, female, protects her chicks beneath her wings. But you wouldn't let me. Gosh, please let him. He's been trying to gather you. Now, I don't know if this sounds odd to you, and I don't know, I mean, but Jesus said, I'm willing to be a mother hen, because he has a nurturing heart. When you nurture your kids, a couple different ways it happens, and just put this in the notes in your margin. the words we use and the schedule we choose. That's how we nurture. The words we use. And you know, you can pre-plan the words you use with your children when they're little. When Kupono was little, very little, 1.5, 2 years old, I really thought that what he needed to know is that he was loved. And not just by me, that everybody loved him. And so I told him from the time he was in his little car seat, in the back seat, everywhere he went, all the time, hundreds and hundreds of times, I would just say, we called him Pono then, or Kupono was his name, and I'd say, hey, Pono, everybody loves you. Everybody loves you, Pono. I even made up a nursery rhyme. So for me, I'd always, you know, hop in bed with my kids at night and hug them up and kiss them, and he's little. I used to get right next to him and singing in his ear, and I'd say, young guy, everybody loves the young guy. Not bad, huh? Market that. Everybody loves the young guy. I sang that to him 10,000 times. Over and over and over and over and over again. He fell asleep so many nights hearing me say, everybody loves you. Because I just thought that that's what he needed to hear. Do you know, if you have a daughter, you can pre-plan and tune their ear on what they should hear. If you're a dad, this is the coolest thing. It's never too late to start. You can don't wait till your daughter is like 12 or 13 or 14 years old to come alongside and try to help her pick out the best guy. That's not the way to do it. And don't buy into the stuff like, come to my house, I'm cleaning my shotgun. That's going to show. He don't care. He's just going to act scared and go do whatever he wants. That's like, that makes us laugh on TV. Here's the way to do it with your little girls. Start talking to them in a way when they're very little. Start talking to them and treating them in a way so when they get older and some yobo comes bouncing in and talks to them a certain way, they realize, wait a minute, that's not how people talk to me. And that's not how people treat me. Create language that will make red flags for them. You can pre-plan that. So when they're 13 or 14 years old and some guy starts coming up and putting the sweet talk on them, they're like, are you crazy? That's not how my dad talks to me. You can almost program how they're going to treat men by the type of man you are. Now you might be thinking, well, like she's 15 now, how am I going to do that? Sit down and have a talk with her. Make us some song or something. I mean, here's the point. It's never too late. The words we use. And the schedule we choose. So my youngest son, Kalani, is he comes in the starting of his sophomore year, okay, in high school. He comes in and he tells me that he has a plan for his life. He wants to graduate high school and 2 years of college now, AA degree, by the time he's 18 years old. That's his plan. He says, Dad, I want to finish high school. I want to go. So eventually he says, I want to skip my last 2 years of high school and go right to college. And I'm thinking, oh, why are you like this? You've been like this your whole life. Everything has to go so fast. And he caught me at like the worst time in my life because I'm like, you know, we're in a big, huge church and all these staff members I'm overseeing and all this stuff. And I'm in a master's program. So every little bit of time I'm trying to squeeze out to do my studies, you know, to, I need help to fool the entire school system. I'm like, oh, you know. And so we sat and we talked about it one night. And he told me his, like what he wanted to do, his plan, his big goal. By 18 years old, I've graduated with my degree. And before I turned 21, I've graduated from college. And all I saw was a big pile of work that was probably not going to happen. And plus, I didn't have time for it in my schedule. But I knew that I had to protect it. I had to nurture that progress. So I put the time aside, and it meant hours of meeting with principals and school representatives and planning out curriculum and getting online. I can't tell you how many times at 7 o'clock at night I've got all the books out and I'm studying, starting to read my paper, and then knock, 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 Dad, and I'm like, here he comes, you know, come on in, son, sit down. And then that conversation would lead to another way that we were going to approach it, and do you know what? There's the amazing thing. At 18 years old, graduated from high school and 2 years of college. And before he was 21 years old, I did watch him walk down and get his diploma from the University of Utah. And did it take a lot of my hours? Yes. Do you know what the biggest problem was when it happened? Is I felt my schedule was set in stone. I've got responsibilities, bills to pay. I got my own classes. What kind of a kook thinks he's going to graduate at 18 years old? What, you're like your mother. You know, so. And here, listen, your schedule isn't set in stone. They used to tell me that back in the day at school. You got to have your kids come to school every single day. They've got to be here. And I would just like to say, we're taking a play today. We're not going anywhere. We're all staying home from school today. We're going to go hang out and do something different. We're going to the fair. We're going to do something. And my friends would be astounded. They'd be like, you didn't send your kids to school? That's against the rules. I said, yeah, and it was a fun day. I sent them the next day, and they asked where I said we played that day. Last time I checked, you're not their parents. I skipped a day of school. Take me away. Schedules aren't set in stone. Sit down with your boss and talk to him. Call in sick. Take a vacation day. I know what it is to have a demanding schedule, and I know what it is to have somebody 15 years old walk in and say, I want to be the first person in the history of the universe, and you have to arrange the words we use, the schedule we choose. That's how we nurture them. Last thing, number three. Rally their determination. This is St. Paul talking, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. All of us, circle that, all of us who are mature should take such a view of things. Do you know, we have to have a picture of who our children are, not just based on their past or who they are today. Because who they are right now could be kind of scary. You could look at who your kids are today and go, whoa, you are going to turn out to be such a wreck. You have to have a picture of who their future can be and who they can become that might not be anything like who they are today. And you know the problem is parents can't predict the future. We tend to decide who people are going to be based on who they were in the past or who they are today. You might even do that to yourself. All the past crap that's going on in your life. Well, here's the ceiling in my life, or who I am right now is always going to be this way. And it might be like, if you go, here's the thing. You don't know the future, but Jesus does. And you could. I'm pretty clear. I'm fairly clear on who my children can become because I've gone to the Lord and asked him, would you give me a picture of their future? And let me tell you what, when you have a picture, listen now, when you have a picture of who your children can become or who you can become in the future, it will call you through things that are occurring today. When you get those calls saying, your second grader is an absolute maniac and I can't have him in the class anymore and come right now for a picture, if you know who they can become. When they're sixth grade and they start to pull away from you, and they will, and they become aloof and they don't talk to you, when you know who they can become, when they're a teenager and it feels like they don't even like you, or they're in their early 20s and you see their choices and it makes you think, where the did I go wrong? If you have a picture of their future, it will call you through. And then you can rally them. Listen, we don't rally our kids to better behavior. Be better, be better, do better, do better, be better, be better. We rally our children to who God says they're going to be someday. Parents are the keeper of the picture of who their children are going to be in the future. Parents are the proprietors of the future. And your children are going to lose track of that sometimes. And they're going to need a parent to step up and say, listen, this is who I see you being someday, and it's worth putting the effort in. That is so much better than saying you're breaking the rules and making the family look like a failure, because that really inspires me. Call them to who they can be. We don't know what the future holds, but we do know the one who holds it. And you can ask him. This week, you could ask him. And don't bail out if you say, well, my kid's like 32 now. So, if you're not dead, you're still in the game. You can ask him, what's their future look like? It'll change things, because he knows. And that's the bottom line. You can see here, we turn our children towards Jesus. That's the bottom line. your children may give an outstanding effort in their life, and they're still going to discover that sometimes that is not enough. No matter how much effort they put in, they're going to discover it's not enough. And it's going to be their ability to connect with Jesus that's going to matter at that point. And yet they may not choose to look that way. There's a lot of options out there. And so one of the things as parents is to help our children know that on your best day, it's still God. Turn to Him. And listen, we're not asking them to turn to religion, and we're not trying to get them to turn to church. We're not trying to get them to turn to rules and regulation. We're saying you can turn to the One who knows you and loves you even more than I do. You can turn to the One that'll give you a clean slate over and over again. You can turn to the One who is your Savior. This is what it says in the Bible. Through the Son, then, God decided to bring the whole universe back to Himself. God made peace through His Son's blood on the cross, and so brought back to Himself all things, both on earth and in heaven. So at the end of the day, turning them towards Jesus.